Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. This is Bruce Norris. Today it's our privilege to have Leslie Appleton-Young. She's the chief economist for the California Association of Realtors. Leslie, welcome back.
Wonderful to be here. Thanks, Bruce.
What is the California Association of Realtors, and how does one become a member?
Well, there is no ability to join the California Association of Realtors directly. What happens is once an individual gets their real estate license, most of them join a local association of realtors, and because of what we call the three-way agreement, that automatically signs them up with the state association and with the National Association of Realtors. But their primary face-to-face contact is with that really critical local association of realtors.
Okay. Is there some education level or some commitment level to a different type of service that makes one a member?
You know, there really isn't. I mean, having a real estate license and working for a broker who is a realtor, essentially you hang your license under what we call the designated realtor. But there is a tremendous amount of encouragement, if you will, to, you know, get a designation, a GRI designation, the international designation, CIPS. There's just a variety, the CRS designation. So there's a multitude of opportunities for continued educational advancement that's strongly supported by the organization. But in order to be a realtor, really just having your license and working for a broker who is a realtor is what you need. Now, many of the real estate organizations, companies, have additional requirements and training that they provide once a new agent comes in. So that is another path that continues that professional development.
Okay. Leslie, part of your job is peeking into the future and sharing what you see with the realtors of California. In 2007, did you share some things that you thought you probably weren't going to have to, but it became obvious it was going to be that way?
Yeah, certainly when we got into the summer and we had the kind of domino effect from the rising tide of delinquencies and foreclosures that really spilled over into the entire global capital market. I don't think that's anything that was anticipated. And so up until that time, you had a market that was contracting at the moderate and low end of the market, where you had the concentration of marginal and or subprime borrowers, and that was primarily in the inland areas of the state, where you also had a lot of new construction going on. So that was kind of the double whammy there. But what happened in August is that the credit markets were impacted. And so the jumbo loans, which I don't think most people would consider to be particularly risky, but the investor appetite for risk essentially disappeared, and that impacted the ability to get credit in the jumbo market as well.
When you speak in front of an audience, is the audience typically wanting to hear the truth, or do they want to hear the glasses half full side of the story?
Well, I think there's two things. They absolutely want to know the truth. What are the numbers showing? What does it look like? What's selling? What's not selling? But in addition to that, they want to know, what's my strategy for this market? Is there data that I can use to talk to my sellers to get them to understand the realities of today's marketplace and list their home at a more realistic price than they might be inclined to do? Is there data and a strategy working with buyers? How can I explain to them that nobody rings a bell at the bottom of the market and that you only know it's a bottom 6 or 12 months afterwards? And if they're planning to be in their home for 10 or 15 years and raise a family and they have a stable job situation, if they're in love with the house, this is a great time to buy. How do I go about being successful in the market, whatever the market is?
Do you think that's been one of the most difficult things for realtors in this transition, is to deal with unrealistic sellers?
Yes, I do. And I think the other point is that about 40% of our membership joined our association, joined the ranks of organized real estate during the boom. And so I think that's been something that's kind of exacerbated the impact of this cycle is that you have so many relatively new practitioners who haven't lived through a cycle or two. You talk to the people that have been doing this, you know, 20 plus years, and they're like, boy, I've seen this, been here before, here's what I'm doing, and they know that you ride it out and the market eventually turns around. But when you have a lot of newer people that have only been in a tight market with multiple offers and buyers ready to do whatever it takes, it's certainly a dramatic adjustment and a reality check.
Well, not only for the agent, but for the owner. I'd have to believe there was an awful lot of people that owned their first home somewhere between 97 and 06, and they've never experienced anything but their prices gradually going up and then exploding. So you can get spoiled to that kind of a deal.
Well, you can, and I think the thing you have to do is remember what you paid for the property in 1996, and my guess is very few of those people regret making that purchase.
I'm sure that's true.
There's a well-known real estate commentator in San Francisco named Ray Brown, who's been around for a long time, and he's often asked, when is the best time to buy real estate? And his answer is always 5 years ago, which I thought was great.
Yeah, that's true. California real estate in general has treated people very, very well. Have a lot of realtors been leaving the business? Do you expect that to occur?
We certainly expect it. I mean, we've done our budgeting at CAR on a 15% decline in membership. This year, it could be more. We're taking a wait-and-see attitude in the first quarter to see how the numbers come in. What's been interesting is that we haven't had nearly the fall-off that we expected because, you know, one of the things you need to remember is this downturn started over 2 years ago.
Yes.
It was the fourth quarter of 2005 where we started to see sales below their year-earlier levels, and yet we had a membership that was slightly over 210,000, and then last year still over about 200,000. So it was a very modest decline in 2007, even going into the second year of the downturn. But, you know, and there may be a lot of reasons for that. You know, you have people that became realtors just to manage their own real estate portfolio. Another kind of change is that about in 2002, CAR provided electronic forms as part of the dues.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really, you know, value-added tangible member benefit that was included with the dues. So that those two things may be making membership stickier on the way down this time than we've seen in prior cycles. But to go back and simply answer your question, yes, we certainly do expect to see a fall-off in the number of California realtors in the next couple of years.
It's very common when you peak in a market like 1989 that you have a decline in membership. But this time, we have a lot more members than we've ever had. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think the last time we topped out, it was a little bit above 150,000.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, it was about 211,000.
In 2007, probably a lot of people struggled, but there were a lot of agents that did very well. What did they do differently than the agents that didn't do so well?
Well, I think a couple of things. The people that have been through downturns before were semi-prepared in the sense that they had an experience with a not red-hot market. And so they, you know, as I've gone around the state and talked to people, there have been a number of interesting and maybe common sense approaches. And one is, whatever you're doing, do twice of it. You know, quantify your activities to get out there. Do open houses. You may not have, you know, had the time to do that in the past. Do whatever you can to increase your sphere of influence to be out there and connect with people. Because even with a declining market, people want to talk about real estate. People are interested in what's going on with the market. How are we compared to last year? What's actually selling? You know, there's always enough transactions for an individual realtor in a given market to have a great year. So how do they get, you know, increase their market share even if the overall market is declining? Certainly looking at short sales, REOs, auctions, working with builders, particularly in the Inland Empire, where in the inland areas in general, but beginning with the Inland Empire inside of central San Diego on up through the center, a central part of the state, you've got builders who are anxious to move their inventory. The commercial market is doing okay. It hasn't been tracking residential sales. It's been tracking the jobs market, so it's been holding up better the last year and a half than the residential real estate market. And I think in general, this is probably a very standard marketing approach or business approach, but identifying your niche, you know, defining yourself as, you know, I'm the, you know, high-end person in this particular market, or I deal with military families, or I deal with people with kids, or I really own this particular farm, or whatever it might be. You know, developing a niche is one way to make yourself the number one person when you've got someone who's looking for that particular strength. So, you know, there's really no one answer, but there's no doubt that a lot more time has to be spent connecting with clients than in the past.
Do you think the ease of financing that went on in 2005 and 2006 kind of snuck into the future and stole buyers that would have not matured until 2008 and 2009 and put them into ownership? I guess my question is, who's the buyer in 2008?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think we jump-started by about 2 years transactions that would have been going on in 2008 and 2009 and pushed them earlier because the financing was available, and that's, you know, a painful adjustment. You know, I think we've all learned looking at the mortgage side of things is that it's really important that people put a down payment into the transaction
and actually have an income,
right? And maybe if they don't take out a 30-year fixed, maybe they should be able to qualify for a 30-year fixed just as a stopgap. But there's no doubt that the easy liquidity has created a situation that we're going to be paying for the next couple of years.
You guys are having a big event in March called the First Time Buyer Fair.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have partnered with the Los Angeles Times. This is going to be a weekend event, a two-day event. It's free. It's at the LA Convention Center. And the idea here was just to provide a one-stop shop of information for potential first-time buyers who may be looking at the headlines over the last year or two and thinking, wow, I thought I was priced out of the housing market in California. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe prices have come down and my down payment savings have come up enough that I could actually qualify to buy a single family home or a condominium. So it's a way to just, there's not going to be a, you know, meet your realtor or any aspect of that. It's really an opportunity for potential home buyers to come in and find out how to make it happen.
Probably the peak of the market, the first-time buyer was probably 20% of the entire market, and usually in a downturn, they get to about 50% or more. Do you see that transition occurring?
You know what? I think that's a really interesting point, because in the past cycles, for example, if you look at the mid-90s in that down cycle, it was the kind of high end of the market that was hit, and it was the moderate and low end of the market that took off. Because, you know, rates were low, prices were lower, first-time buyers were there and ready to go. This time around, it's going to be a little bit more difficult because, as you noted, the first-time buyers of 2008 and 2009, many of them already bought in 2005 and 2006 and are in trouble and may even be in foreclosure. So I'm not exactly sure how that mix between first-time buyers versus repeat is going to play itself out. But I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult this time around because we did kind of front-load their transactions. And as I said, you know, as we looked at the market over the past 2 years, what was really stunning is how stable the high end of the market has been. You know, if you look at the San Francisco Bay Area, for example, and look at the peninsula, you know, San Mateo, San Francisco, down into the parts of Santa Clara County that hug the bay, those markets have seen very little, if any, erosion in prices because the demand has remained strong and the supply is very much contained. There's a scarcity up there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go inland where the first-time buyers have been flocking, that's not the case. And there's a tremendous amount of competition now, obviously, for home sellers who might want to trade up from unoccupied new housing as well as the foreclosure market.
The median price in California seemed to be pretty resilient until the last half of the year.
Right.
How is that determined, and how can the depending on the sales, how can those numbers be skewed?
Yeah, well, that's another really good question. The median home price is pretty straightforward. Half the home sold for more than what the median, half the home sold for less. And up until August, we actually had an increase in the median home price because even though the overall market was smaller, you know, the number of transactions dropped almost 24% in 06 and 26% in 07, the moderate and low end of the market was shrinking more.
Mm-hmm.
So that median was artificially higher. I don't think anybody, you know, and I would explain this when I talk to the press every month, this doesn't mean that prices are going up. What this means is the stability of prices at the high end of the market are balancing out and overriding the contraction in the moderate and low end. So what happened in August and September and October and November is that the hit for the jumbo mortgages, when just, you know, we had 2 months where financing simply wasn't available, reduced the number of transactions at the high end, and that caused the overall overall median to go down. So let me just kind of explain to you what I'm talking about. If you look at sales of $1 million or more homes in August compared to August of 2006,
mm-hmm.
they were down only 3.4%.
Okay.
If you look at September 07 to September 06, they were down 26.4%.
Okay.
So that's the impact of that credit crunch in just a one-month period.
If you wanted to get a better idea of what prices were doing, is the Case-Shiller index more accurate?
You know, they're all different. I mean, the Case-Shiller index is good. It's also very aggregated. The strength of that index is that it looks at the same house sold every year. So it's kind of a repeat sales index. So you don't have this change in the mix, if you will. You're following one property every time it exchanges hands. When realtors are dealing with clients who are looking in a particular market area, getting either median or average prices for that particular area is what's really absolutely critical, because there's no perfect aggregate number, because the disparity between regions, cities, counties, communities, and even within communities can be very dramatic. So there's no really right or wrong number, but you just want to look as many sources of data as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
For a seller who is anticipating listing their home, the key is not to look at what else is listed, but what's just sold. And that will give them an idea of what the market is doing right now, because you don't want to be pricing off the expectations of other sellers. You want to be looking at what's actually selling in the marketplace.
You know, in a market like we have now, you have constant competition coming into the market every day, and a lot of it is starting to have a name attached to it called a short sale or an REO.
Right.
So it makes it very tough to price a property one time and be accurate for 30 days going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to be very, very flexible. But I think the key here is that you don't want to be following the market down.
Mm-mm.
And if you want to sell your home, if you're motivated to sell your home, if you have enough cushion and equity, which many people do, to make it happen, you've just got to accept the fact that constant appreciation in your home is not part of the contract, and that the market cycles up and it cycles down, and you've, you know, lived in your home and consumed housing services all these years, and get real and maybe look at the current comps and go down 5 or 10% and get it on at a very aggressive price. I think that's really at least what I'm hearing. And again, you need to, I'm not a salesperson, so I'm really just voicing what I hear from practitioners in the field. But you really don't want to get into a situation where your property's been listed for 6 months and you've had 3 price reductions.
No.
You know, get to that price right off the bat, be a bargain, and you're going to get a lot more people looking.
The volume of sales, so we got to about 625,000. Car projects about 334,500 next year. And I project, honestly, look at the foreclosures, probably maybe half of those will be REO sales.
Yes.
So how do you feel about the direction of prices in 08? Do you think it'll be a pretty soft year?
I think it will be a pretty soft year. And again, it's going to vary dramatically from region to region. But the correlation between falling prices or softer prices and foreclosures is clear. I mean, it's supply and demand. So, you know, you look at the, you know, high-end coastal communities where supply is limited with desirable school districts and all that kind of stuff, not going to be an issue. But when you look inland, I think you are going to continue to see some pretty dramatic hits in terms of prices until we work this inventory through the system.
I hate to bring up a bad something in the future, but I was wondering why lenders haven't adjusted their HELOC amounts, because they got to be at 100% or more in the Inland Empire.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know. Obviously, the financial services industry is going through a lot of pain.
Maybe they just don't want to think about it.
And consolidation. And I've certainly heard from realtors that they're having trouble oftentimes dealing with the lenders in terms of getting a short sale and so on. So
oh, sure.
I guess my only comment would be just wait a few months, and I think everybody will get a little bit more flexible and realistic.
Do you see the inventory levels staying about the same? We're about 15 or 16 months? Or do you see them growing?
Well, I think I think they'll grow a little bit. I mean,
okay.
We always get a certain amount of seasonality in the market in terms of listings. So as we get into March, April, May, in addition, as the subprime arms adjust throughout 2008, that's going to create a cycle where you're going to get a certain percentage of those going into default and foreclosure. The other thing I just want to again add is you've just got a tremendous amount of variability. In November, the CAR, Unsold Inventory Index, which is the ratio of listings to sales, was 15.3 months.
Right.
In Southern California, it was 19.7 months. And in the Bay Area, it was 6.7 months. And within Southern California, obviously, if you go into the Inland Empire, for example, and I don't know what the number is off the top of my head, but it's well into the 20s. So
yes.
Again, a lot of variability depending on region.
Okay. We got less than a minute. Let me just ask you quickly, do you see you going back to calculating affordability the way you used to because of the lending changes are now reflective of the old times?
Well, the problem, well, we'll see. I mean, I think I'm very pleased with the changes that we made in terms of targeting the first-time home buyer, because I think first-time home buyer affordability is is something you have data that you can grab onto.
It's probably the most important because they don't have equity bringing to the next
transaction.
Exactly.
And the problem with our index was partly the issue of the loans being made without kind of the standard underwriting assumptions. But the other issue was just how do you guesstimate how much equity people are bringing in from their prior home sale? So that was part of the challenge with the trade-up buyer affordability index.
Okay. With that, we have to wrap our first program. Leslie, thank you so much for joining us.
You're so welcome. Anytime.
Catch Bruce and the Norris Group team January 31st through February 2nd in San Jose as Bruce teaches his REO boot camp for the first time ever in Northern California. Or join the team in Los Angeles at the Investors Resource of America Los Angeles chapter for California marketing timing information February 5th. And then February 9th for Bruce's one-day California-only investor intensive course. Visit www.thenorrisgroup.com to find out more about these events or call the office at 951-780-5856. You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week here on News Talk 590 KTIE.